Good morning. 9:25 a.m. Yes, even later today, but 9:25 a.m. It's a Thursday, March the 31st, 2016. Put it back here a little bit. It's cold. It's uggy. It's been spitting snow all morning. It snowed all day yesterday. Well, all afternoon yesterday. Snowed hard at times, but it was warm enough that nothing stuck. I got up this morning and took the trash out and thought, oh my gosh. Wind was blowing like 30 miles an hour. There was snow. Overcast. It wasn't sunny. It wasn't pleasant. It was uggy. So I went back in and had another cup of coffee. Probably in hindsight, I should have come out, but I didn't. So there. I am now. I went through my calendar and updated all the days in March that I've walked. I've done a lot of walking in March compared to the first two months of the year. So, you know, we'll try to keep the streak alive. I know I missed a day earlier in the week, but some things can't be helped. Today I could help it. I was just being lazy, so I'm out. Today I'm pondering Yog's Law. Yog's Law is the creation of James McDonald, who's a science fiction writer who coined the term way back as a way to identify scams. So the law states that money flows toward the writer. So if somebody asks you for $300 to read your manuscript, that's a violation of Yog's Law. Reading fees, all that stuff, no. Yog's Law. So the reason that that came up is a conversation that I've been having elsewhere about self-publishing and how there are a certain number of people who believe that self-publishing violates Yog's Law. Because money doesn't flow to the writer, it flows from the writer. And the problem with that is, no, it doesn't. So my argument is that the money has to flow toward the writer from somewhere, and the from somewhere is the publisher. So the publisher is the person who sells the book. The publisher is the entity that sells the book to somebody. Now, in a self-published author, generally that somebody is a writer, a reader, like on Amazon. In traditional channels, that could be a reader on Amazon. It could be a distributor, like Ingram. It could be a wholesaler, like Ingram. It could be a distributor, like Barnes & Noble. But the publisher sells the book. That's the nature of what a publisher does. The publisher produces the book, the publisher sells the book. So when you self-publish, the money has to come from the publisher, because the writer writes it. The publisher produces it. So if you're self-published, you're actually wearing two hats. So the writer hat, you write the book, you put a couple drafts through it, you run it by maybe a few beta readers and incorporate some of their changes, maybe. Maybe run a spell check, maybe run a grammar check. They don't work for shit, but sometimes you do it. Particularly novel length works. They're largely pointless. There's so many false positives that it's difficult to find the ones that are truly errors. At any rate, then you hand it off to the publisher. Now, if you're a traditionally published author, sometimes you'll hand it off to an agent who will hand it off to a publisher, but ultimately it's going to a publisher. Because the revenue flows the money flows from the publisher in this little minuet of money. So if you're the self-publisher, that means you have to take off your writer hat, because the writer hat has no business publishing. You know, the writer is the writer. The publisher is the publisher. It's a different skill set. And it's not a difficult skill set to acquire, but it is a different skill set. Publisher is not concerned with characterization. Publisher is concerned with formatting. Publisher is not concerned with plot. Publisher is concerned with cover. Publisher hires the editor. Publisher commissions the cover art. Publisher handles the formatting and layout. That's what the publisher does. That's what the publisher pays for. Where a writer contributes the words and the time and the effort, the publisher contributes the time and the effort and the money to make these other things happen. And so a self-publisher, because he hires an editor, because she hires a graphic artist, because they hire layout people, that doesn't mean the money is flowing from the writer. In that case, the money is flowing from the publisher. It's just going to the services that the publisher needs in order to create the product, the same way that the writer has to pay for electricity, the publisher has to pay for editing. It's the nature of the beast, it's how it works. Unless you go with a scammer like AuthorHouse or Ex Libris or one of those, Outskirts Press, where they charge the retail price for the editing and then don't do it, and then charge the retail price for the cover and then give you a default paste-up job, and then sell you the upsell to your marketing program, which is dumb, because the marketing program is, they post a 1x1 inch ad on the page that nobody ever sees, but they've run advertising. It's a website they own, generally. So the money isn't flowing from the writer, unless the writer hires a publisher that siphons their money off. And apparently this is a difficult thing to identify, because there are companies that call themselves self-publishing companies. And I got to admire the companies that do that, even while I look somewhat sideways at the authors who use them. Because this is the moral equivalent, the self-publishing company is the moral equivalent of abandon all hope, ye who enter here. It's a sign that says, we're going to cheat you, and you will pay for it. The vanity presses are a little harder to kind of scope out. They ask for money up front, which is, you know, they're going to print books for you, and you can buy them at $15 a pop, but it's not exactly the way things work. It's not exactly the way publishing, as we normally think of it, works. It's certainly not the way self-publishing works. The diagnostic is, if the publisher publishes more than one author, they're not a self-publishing company. It really comes down to that. They're not self-publishing if they publish more than one author. If they charge you for the things that publishers normally do because it's their part of the bargain, then they're a vanity press. And particularly a vanity press if they don't give you the books back. If they keep the file and publish it themselves, it's a vanity press. I don't understand why this is difficult to grasp. I don't understand why this is being bandied around in writers' circles. It boggles me. It's like, why is this even a conversation? Why are we talking about this? The symptomology is really quite clear. The diagnostics are unambiguous. I don't get it. Speaking of not getting it, I also got the questions from some pre-con conventions for the Public Library Association's panel next, a week from tomorrow. And the questions really underscore how little the librarian in charge of this understands what self-publishing consists of. Monk Post. Like, the one of the questions was, how do you, since you don't have editors looking at your work, how do you assure that your books are professionally produced? I'm probably paraphrasing it, but the statement was that since I don't use editors, how can I be sure that my book is professional? And I'm looking at this going, why wouldn't I use an editor? I don't understand the question. You think because I'm self-published, I don't hire editors? I don't have editors who review the work and offer feedback? And I'm not using editors, some of whom might have actually worked for Orbit or Bain or Tor or one of those. So, and the follow-on question was, what is your editing process like? It's like, well, I hire an editor, I send the manuscript off to the editor, and then take the editor's feedback and wade through it. I mean, it's my editing process like. The assumption being, of course, I guess that I don't use an editor, so how do I guarantee things like typos? Well, I can guarantee typos. What I can't guarantee is that there aren't any. I can pretty much guarantee there's a typo. Because I really can't prove that there isn't. And I think it comes back to something that I've said for quite a long time, which sounds sort of bitterish, that there's two standards. Tradpubs can get away with having 20, 30, 40, 50 typos in a book, and nobody says anything about it because clearly it's not the author's problem. You know, it's sloppy production on the part of the publisher. But you don't see, oh, this guy needed a better, you don't see on Stephen King's book, you don't see, oh, Stephen King needed a better editor because there's 14 typos right in the first paragraph. Okay, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but still, you put a few paragraphs, if there are a few typos in a self-published book, oh, wow, book sucks, it should have had a better editor. I've had people say that about Oxford commas. Your book is riddled with Oxford commas. Why are you using these commas? They're typo. A good editor would have corrected that for you. Clearly not. Which isn't to say I have not had my share of typos, which isn't to say I haven't actually published a book with an HTML entity that didn't actually convert into the entity it was supposed to be, because I typoed the entity, which appeared perfectly well, until I uploaded it, and it didn't. Yikes. On the other side of that coin is that, I can't remember which one it was, Full Share? Double Share? When we published Double Share, Robin Sullivan did a find and replace that took every period that occurred before quote out. So any sentence that was part of dialogue that should have ended period quote ended quote. Everyone. And she was a pretty good editor. She was not self-publishing. I was not self-publishing my books through her. So it's this sort of dual standard for self-publishers, indies. And one of them was, why does your Does your book deserve to be in the library? Make your case. No. My book does not deserve to be in the library, because no book deserves to be in a library. Because a library isn't about any particular book. The library is about a community service. The library is about understanding who the patrons are, what they want, and to the best of your ability, providing it. Do I believe a rural library in East Overshue, Wisconsin should have a copy of my book? Does my book deserve to be in that library? I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know who their patrons are. They may have, a lot of people who like really sweet Western romance, and my book is not a sweet Western romance. So spend your money on buying sweet Western romance, not my book. It isn't up to me. It isn't up to the book. It's up to the library's collections development people, however they handle it. And it's about whether or not they have the budget that they need to buy the books they want, to buy the books that they think will appeal. It's not whether or not they should buy an indie book because it's cheap. Buy an indie book because it's cheap if it will serve collection. If it will contribute to the collection, sure. But because it's indie? Because it's mine? This just strikes me as being kind of odd. I really probably shouldn't call them dumb, because to me it sounds dumb. It's like, this is, I'm not a librarian. So maybe my perception of what a library is for is skewed. Maybe I don't really understand why librarians stock books. I'm pretty sure librarians don't stock books because they like stocking books. I think it's because they like serving their patrons. They like having stories that appeal to their clientele. And they like being able to do it on pitiful budgets that most of them have. From that perspective, looking at the indie pool is probably a good deal for them. But does my book deserve to be in the library? Which library? Library of Congress? I don't know. Jeez. It's weird. It's just, it was the whole, and there were several of those questions. There were several questions that were like that. It's like, well, you know, how do we deal with books that are filled with typos? Don't buy them. The whole question is sort of like, really? Really? Why? Why would I think my book? If they have to choose between Slaughterhouse-Five and Quarter Share, why would I ever think they should pick Quarter Share over Slaughterhouse-Five? It strikes me as being silly. There are books that should be in the library long before they should be considering buying my book. And if they can't afford those books, then they shouldn't be buying mine. Now, you know, okay, they're down to the last rounding error in their annual budgets for acquisitions, and my book at $10.95 is cheaper than the HarperCollins library bound paper edition at $75.92. Okay, fine. Buy a couple of my books, because you can't afford to buy the one you want, and you still have money, and if you don't spend it in your budget, you'll lose it. Okay, I get that. That part I can understand. That part's the business of being a librarian. And under no circumstance do I ever want them to think that I'm trying to tell them how to run their business. Because I, frankly, don't know enough about it. I'm married to a librarian. That doesn't mean I understand libraries. It doesn't mean I know, particularly public libraries, I don't know necessarily how they work. I have some ideas. I have some preconceived notions. They may be no more valid than librarians have for self-published books.
Okay.
I did it. I did the walk. I did the talk. I'm at the back gate, and I am starving. No, I'm not, but I am very hungry. So, let me just say, tomorrow's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.